So I am Carolyn Sarno, and I am from NEEP, and there's my presentation. And so you mentioned, Doug mentioned RIOs before, so we are one of five energy efficiency regional nonprofits throughout the country. NEEP covers 11 states all the way from Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, all the way up, including the District of Columbia. So it's 11 and the district. Lucky us, so we get you fine folks in D.C. It's always exciting. And our vision is that we're transforming the way you think about and use energy in the world around us. So it was a great overview of talking about technical and kind of what's happening in the Northwest and the Southeast. And what I'm going to talk to you about is model policy that we developed several years ago that we're going to be updating this year, and why it's important to do this as a comprehensive approach and not just piecemeal with code adoption or training. So before I start that, I wanted to just ask, Jim asked who's been involved in the technical side of things. Has anybody been involved in local policy advocacy work at all? Great. So anybody been involved in training? Excellent. Everyone been to a training? You all should raise your hand. Hopefully you've all been trained. So now, I find building codes, what?
Fun,
interesting, exciting, right? Yeah? Building codes are exciting or morally offensive. Who said that? Did you say that, Doug? No. Oh, but if you're Representative Lance Harville in Maine, that is what you think about building codes. This is a true story. True story. So the reason I put this is that this is what we're dealing with. There's a lot of us that we're all educated and motivated, and it's great to see so many of you in the room right now that understanding the importance of building energy codes and why we need to have an effective policy. So it's great we want to drive forward and help reach states' greenhouse gas reduction plans and energy efficiency targets, ones that are set by DOE or state or local levels. However, there's a lot of other people who feel that building codes, not even just the energy portion of the building codes, you don't tell me how to build my building. And so we're carefully, all of us across and my counterparts, are dealing with trying to say, it's not just how much it costs, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many jobs you create. Still, I find building codes morally offensive. And this is a true story. This is how he started his testimony back with Maine, who ultimately he was successful, and Maine did end up repealing their statewide building code, which was very successful. And we touted it as, like, this is a model for everybody to follow. And now, unfortunately, if you're under the population of 4,000 in Maine, you have to locally opt into the building code. So they went a little bit backwards there. So we developed this model progressive building energy codes policy. This makes Isaac a little itchy because he did once work for NEEP, and he helped develop this guidance that we had. And the reason we developed it was to have a comprehensive approach to building energy codes. So it's not just about adopting a code, which is really important, but then having a structure put in place for training and education, funding of training of code officials, having specialized third-party inspectors. And so this is some of what I'm going to go through, but making sure that it's effective, that you're going to reach high rates of compliance. And I know DOE has set a goal of 90% compliance by 2017 for all the states when they got their ERA funding, but we want full compliance. It should be actual full compliance with the code. Code is the code, and we want people to achieve that. So we've established and we developed this model policy, and it's not like we sat in our office and developed this model policy and then said to the states, here, you go use this. We actually formed a group of national and regional stakeholders, state agencies, utility program administrators, got together with our leadership group and said, what are we going to do to move the region forward? How can we use this and help replicate it throughout the rest of the state? So, and it really, you know, the connection is linking building energy codes with the floor to stretch codes that I'm going to talk about, and then clarity. So having a clear distinction between codes and standards, like rating systems. So the elements of our model progressive building energy code policy is code adoption I talked about, having automatic adoptions in states like Massachusetts has an automatic adoption provision, as does Maryland in our region. But that's only great for a state that actually has the structure put in place to support that. We don't want to see states jumping to adopt the 2012 code if they can't support it and don't have the training resources and educated their code officials and are not going to be complying with the code. So it goes into elements about how they can do that. And then it talks about code compliance with training, education, funding, specialized inspectors, which I'm going to go through, building performance measurement, building energy rating and disclosure, and then how it integrates with other policies. So as I said, how does it integrate with states' climate action plans? How does it meet their energy reduction plans or their greenhouse gas? How does it work with the utility program administrators? How does it tie into their plans to offer rebates and incentives? Can they claim savings for helping to support code compliance? And I'll talk about it at the end, but you see there's a little update coming in 2012. So one of the great things and what we're really proud of in developing this policy that we did back in 2009, it took several years to create, is that we came up with and we said, these are some policies with this group that we want to move forward. Well, now we have a lot of great examples within this guidance, and then we call it our Bible, it's the team's Bible. But we have examples that we can actually point to throughout the region who have adopted some states, all elements, but the majority of the elements which are in this guidance. And one of them is the Massachusetts Stretch Code. So has everyone heard of the Massachusetts Stretch Code? Yay! I don't know, is Jim Edelson still hiding in the back of the room? He would get itchy on this one because now we're under development of the next version of the stretch code. So for those of you who haven't heard about the Massachusetts stretch code, it was the first stretch code that was developed in the country, so we're very proud of that. It's called Appendix 115AA. It was formerly called 120AA. And it's an appendix to the eighth edition of the code. I'm not going to go into a lot of details about this because I could spend a long time talking about it, but it was adopted on May 12th of 2009. And what it does is it provides communities with the option to adopt a more stringent code than the current base code. So it's approximately 20% more stringent. And some of the requirements, it's based on the commercial side on core performance. It took core performance and we had it written into code language. So a code official could actually go out and inspect using, you know, not using another standard, but using core performance, which also tied back into the utility program administrators program. So in Massachusetts, National Grid and NSTAR and some of the others. In residential, it only applies to new construction. It requires a HERS rating of 65 or 70, depending on the size of the home. And it only applies to renovations if you put a renovation on, you know, like an addition onto your house. It doesn't apply to, someone was asking, like at my town meeting, like, what about the storm windows? Does this apply to storm windows? It doesn't apply to your storm windows. It doesn't apply if you're going to be putting in new kitchen cabinets. So we had to go through a lot of education on that. On the commercial side, it only applies to new commercial additions. Oh, Jim Edelson walked right back. You missed it, Jim. I said you get a little itchy talking about the new stretch code. It's new construction, but renovations are exempt from the stretch code. So if you do core and shell, you know, strip it all out on a commercial building, it actually doesn't trigger the stretch code in that community. So that's something that we're looking at potentially for the next version of the stretch code. It's really a missed opportunity because you're missing out on those energy savings in that community, one. And also we're finding that it's a real hole that people aren't taking advantage of utility incentives. They're leaving free money on the table because they're not going and getting the appropriate lighting retrofit dollars. So, but this is what it's based on. And in Massachusetts right now, and this is as of November 16th, it is the most current map, that we have 104 municipalities. So when we originally thought with the stretch code, I don't think we ever envisioned it would catch on as quickly as it did for 104 municipalities to adopt it. And this is local level adoption. These are 104 communities, either in a city, it has to be done through an aldermanic process, but in a local small town, which we have many, there's 428 communities in Massachusetts, and the locals, you know, it has to go through a town meeting process. So citizens have to vote and say, yes, we want a more stringent code in our community. So currently, there's 104, with several more that are going to be going to town meeting in March and April and June of this year to also adopt the stretch code. I will say in Massachusetts, it's a carrot and a stick approach. They're not, you know, some of them are doing it because, yes, we want a more stringent code, and others are doing it because they're getting more money. So if you adopt the stretch code in Massachusetts, it's part of the Green Communities Plan that was set by Governor Deval Patrick, and it was it's one of five requirements that you have to do. You have to reduce your baseline energy use by 20%. You have to do as-of-right siting, expedited permitting process, the stretch code, and then fuel mileage, you know, for your fleet maintenance, rather. So if you become a green community and you've adopted the stretch code, it makes you gives you the opportunity to get an available pot of money from the state to do energy efficiency improvements in your public buildings, which is a great win. So it's a great program, and stretch code 2.0 is coming this spring. So we are under development now with Mathis Consulting, NBI, and NEEP and the state of Massachusetts to develop what that next version of the stretch code is. So stay tuned. We're very excited about that. And the other exciting part is not only to look at these 104 communities, but as this is an important part of our model policy, we now have other states in our region, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New York, Delaware, that are interested in adopting a stretch code as well. So it's certainly exciting to see that not only is it caught on in Massachusetts, but in a lot of other states in our region, as well as across the country. One other important guidance that's part of our model policy is building energy rating and disclosure. How many of you have heard of this? Asset rating. So we kind of in tandem, but it's an element of our model policy. We developed this report and hired Dunsky Energy Consulting to develop this roadmap. Again, with this roadmap, there'll be an update coming this year. When we had developed it, it was really active in 30 countries outside the U.S., and now it's catching up like wildfire in Oregon, in Austin, New York City. Maine has a resolve to develop a building energy program. But we see this really as an important step towards building energy code compliance, and that's where we tie that link back in. So it's another quote time. The reason the arena collapsed was due to the building code. Really? Was it because it could have been, you know, faulty construction, the materials? Was it the code?
Is it Lance again?
No. No, it wasn't him. It actually came from a builder. This actually came from a code official. This is what they said. This does come from Maine. Oh, by the way, that arena was built before they had a building code in that town. So I'm not sure why that building code, but perhaps if they were educated and trained on why building energy codes are important, not just the code officials, but the state agencies, all of you, you know, ASHRAE members, if everybody took an active, you know, educated approach, builders, consumers, building owners. I mean, I was a facilities manager, and I say I'm a reformed facilities manager. It's really important to know why it's important, why the benefits are of energy codes and construction practices in general. So we don't do enough to train our, the building operators and code officials and practitioners. And there's not enough joint training. There's a lot of segmented training that goes on where you train just architects and engineers, but we don't do enough training together in one room, and that's something that we're working on throughout some of our states. But another thing is that states don't fund their training programs, and Connecticut has a great program, their code training fund, and they have raised, every year they raise $1 million through permit fees just for training of their code officials. $1 million. It's gone down, you know, it fluctuates obviously with the construction market, but this is the latest information that they've provided. So, and then, I moved away from Maine and on to Connecticut, but just as a note, what I said before, when we're talking about policy and development of codes and why we took core performance and translated it into code language, is that we did have states that were looking to adopt LEED as code, and LEED is not code. Connecticut learned this lesson the hard way, even after we told them many, many times. In 2007, they adopted LEED Silver as their commercial code. It wasn't until this past fall that they finally ratified their code in Connecticut. So they spent many years trying to go through their process, which was really, really, really unfortunate. It includes other elements that are beyond. And one thing that we're carefully watching, why I put the IGCC down there, is that the International Green Construction Code, is that we are following that process to see how is that going to play out. We have two states in our region, Rhode Island and Maryland, who have adopted the IGCC, but Rhode Island is only doing it to meet certain elements that the state building code official has control over. He's not going to adopt it in its entirety. And in Maryland, the state adopts it, but it's down to the localities. So there's no support for the localities of how are they actually going to enforce it. So they're left to their own demise, and they've got, I don't know how to do VOCs, or, you know, I'm focusing on the built environment itself. So those are some of the things we're looking at, and we just say to states, if you're going to adopt and you want to go beyond, you need to adopt a stretch code and a reach code in the most effective manner, like the way that was done in Massachusetts and how Oregon and some of these other states are doing it as well. So we're going to be updating the model policy in 2012. We've started that. It's getting underway now. And it's going to have a focus in addition this time on existing buildings. So I mentioned the part about the stretch code and how it kind of leaves that bucket or the hole, really, when you get to commercial buildings, which we have a lot of vacant commercial space in this country, and they're not necessarily tearing them down, but they're renovating those existing buildings. So how are we going to address that? And then something we call ERA Go Bye-Bye. So So Era's gone. The money's been spent. We're not getting any more money. But the one thing that it did that was tremendously helpful is it helped to fund states to move forward in the code adoption process, and it helped to train code officials and practitioners and others. Well, now that that money's gone away, who's going to fill that in? So we advocate for what Connecticut and some of the other states are doing. But we have to figure out a way to, for states to become self-supporting. And then a discussion that a lot of folks are having on outcome-based codes. What will that look like? How does that work? And then getting to zero. Because ultimately, everything that we do on the buildings team at NEAT is to drive it towards zero net energy. And how? What is that pathway going to look like? And how are we going to get to zero net energy? So I just leave you with, you know, our goal also, you know, is to protecting the built environment. The school with the bulldozer was built, it's in a school in New Hampshire, was built in 1970, torn down, gone, horrible building. But this beautiful school was built in 1928 in Rhode Island and is renovated back to its original architectural integrity and is getting 40% energy savings based on ASHRAE 90.1 2007. So great model to follow. Those are some resources.
Thank you.